change. Marianne, you guys are so cute. You are just really cute. Warms my heart. Well, you are in for an absolute treat today, my friend, Reverend Gregory Toole. I guess we've known each other for about 15 years, huh, Gregory? Gregory worked at home office for 5 years, and now he's in his own, it's called SOM Seva, and he does compassionate communication. And Susan told you a little bit about it, but I want to tell you personally that we have worked with Gregory all weekend, and I'm going to be at this retreat this afternoon at his workshop because I had probably one of the biggest breakthroughs for me personally, and I just can't thank you enough. For the gift that Gregory brings to us is a way to not only communicate with each other, but to communicate with our own hearts. And when we communicate with our hearts, there's an opening, there's a healing that takes place. So you are absolutely in luck. You are blessed. We are blessed to have you. And please, I can't say any more, but that I love you dearly, and come give us your good stuff. Give him a warm welcome, please.
Thank you very much, and good morning. Good to be here. I was in this building, I was in this center maybe like 15 years ago, so I was really excited to come back here with Reverend Maggie here, and what a joy it has been to be with the board on Friday evening, the practitioners and board on Saturday. You have such a committed group of leaders in the center here, starting with your minister, Reverend Maggie. Thank you so much for the way that you serve, the board, the practitioners. This group just really just stayed present all Friday evening, all day Saturday, from 9 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, after we went to like 8:30 on Friday night. So this group was just so dedicated, and I just so felt so inspired that not only was I bringing some information and some tools and some practices, but how they played full out the whole time. So good to be here with all of you. And for our talk today, I've taken some 7 steps to a co-committed relationship, which is essentially a conscious relationship, from the book Conscious Loving by Gay and Katie Hendricks. And this will whet the appetite, perhaps, for the workshop afterward, where we'll get into some specific tools and practices and ways of being with each other that allow us to be in conscious relationship with one another. To be authentic, to be an authentic relationship, to be ourselves, to be who we are, and to allow everyone else to be who they are. I think that's what we're really here for on the planet. I think we really, as much as it scares us at times, I think we really want to be seen. I think all of us want to be seen and heard for who we are, but yet we're scared sometimes to really fully show up. You know, will we be fully loved if we show up authentically as who we are? And yet that's what we're here to be and do. There's that quote that says, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. And I love that quote. So what turned me on to this book, Conscious Loving, which I highly recommend, by the way, Conscious Loving by Gay and Katie Hendricks. And what really turned me on with this book, because I was with it for a long time. Do you ever have a book that you have for a long time and you open it, you read a little bit, and you just keep open it and read it, but you never really get to it? But then I got to this part in the book about a term they call upper limits. And it answered my challenges personally in relationships over the years. And because I would have this scenario, and I'm talking about in my intimate relationships when I would be in partnership, I would have this situation where I would be in an argument about something really petty. Something really meaningless, like why did we park the car over there instead of over there? But it would be very, like, really into the argument. And while I was in the argument, I would be saying to myself, why am I arguing about this right now? this is really not even important. Why? But even though I'm observing this and I'm asking that question, I'm still very invested in the argument at the same time. And it was a real curiosity of mine for a while, like, what just happened there? And I was reading this book, and we came to this chapter on, the chapter itself even had a very intriguing title, because the chapter itself said, the only problem you need to solve in a co-committed relationship, and co-committed for them is what the way they refer to a conscious relationship. And it said, the chapter said, the only problem you need to solve. I mean, wouldn't that catch your attention? Yeah, right? Like, in relationship, the only problem you need to solve? But the only problem that we need to solve, according to the authors, is the upper limits problem. And the upper limits problem is essentially where we unconsciously block our good. Where we unconsciously come to a place where too much good is coming in for us in this moment. And so unconsciously, we find a way to bring ourselves down. The way the authors came to know this problem is they are therapists, and they would work with couples. And so they work with hundreds of couples over the years, and also they've been married for about 50 years themselves. And when the couples would come into their office, and they would come in usually in desperation, they would have just had a big blowout fight, and they're in desperation of like wanting to save their marriage or their relationship. And they would ask them, well, what was happening before you had this blowout argument? And in almost all cases, what was happening before was something really positive. Like they had just gone away for a weekend and gotten really close, and then they came home and on Monday had a blowout argument. And they began to see this pattern over and over again. And so they began to describe it as the upper limits problem, where we get to a place where too much good is coming in and we don't know how to handle it. And the upper limits problem is not a problem in itself. The problem is that we don't know what to do. When all this good and it's too good and we don't know what to do, so essentially we unconsciously sabotage ourselves. So we'll have an argument, a blowout argument, or we'll get sick, or something that will unconsciously sabotage it. And yet the solution that they provide is really simple. The solution to the upper limits problem is to tell the truth about what's going on. And we talked a lot this weekend about telling the truth and being authentic and being real. And in telling the truth of what's happening is, wow, I'm having a really good time. This is really good, but I've kind of reached my limit right now as to how much good I can take in. And so the solution is that we recognize that, we speak that, and then we take some space. So it's really that simple, because then we don't have to sabotage ourselves. Then we don't have to unconsciously find a way to bring ourselves down. So that's what got me hooked on this book, and I'll read something here from the authors where they describe what I was just speaking to you. So this is from the book. They say, a great deal of careful work is needed to resurrect the ability to live in a state of positive energy. We all know how to feel bad, and we know how to feel neutral. What we need to learn is how to feel good. Society tells us that we will feel good if we smoke the right cigarette, eat the right chocolate bar, or drink the right liquor. These are costly lies. Feeling good is a natural right, and you can do it all the time with no artificial stimulants if you follow a few basic instructions. In a co-committed relationship, the central task is to learn to stay in positive energy for longer and longer periods of time, with the ultimate goal of living continuously in a state of positive energy. There are specific skills you can learn for doing just that. They are important, perhaps critical, for the full development of ourselves. So that's how they describe this. And many of us grew up in places where, in families, in communities where you could only have so much good. You weren't supposed to have good all the time. So in a way, we don't know how to handle that. And so if we don't know how to handle that, we can unconsciously sabotage ourselves. So I want to talk to you about the seven steps that they provide for being in conscious relationship. The first step is commitment, being committed to being in conscious relationship. And I'm going to tell you what they share about what we're committing to. So the first thing we commit ourselves to is being close. We commit ourselves to being close. Because often, that sounds obvious, right? Like, well, of course, I want to be in a relationship, so I want to be close. But oftentimes, we're very scared to be close. So when we start to get really close, we get afraid, and we subconsciously can unconsciously sabotage ourselves. So the second commitment is I commit myself to my own complete development as an individual, which we're in a science of mind community, so that probably is one that we've already committed to, right? We're here for our growth. So we're committed to our growth as an individual, so we don't look for a partner who is going or encourage a partner to not step up and be the fullness of who they are. We're also committed to fully revealing ourselves in relationship and not to concealing ourselves. So we're open, right? We tell the truth about what's really going on with us. And in the workshop this afternoon, there will be a lot of opportunities to talk about what that actually means, about how we tell the truth. One example would be that when we feel something, and something is emerging us and we're feeling that, often what happens when we feel something is we project that outward. Like, I feel angry right now because you did X, Y, and Z. That's not revealing the truth. I feel angry right now because of something in me, something that arose in me. The fourth thing we commit ourselves is to the full empowerment of people around us. And I'm just going to roll through these. The fifth thing is we commit ourselves to acting from the awareness that I am 100% responsible. I am the source of my reality. And the sixth thing is I commit myself to having a good time in my relationships. And that one seems a little strange as well. I commit myself to having a good time. And that one is there because a lot of times we've gotten the message that relationships are hard. Relationships are really hard. And this commitment says, I commit myself to having a good time. I commit myself to enjoying myself in relationship, not making it all work. I'm just working at this relationship. The 100% responsibility commitment that was mentioned there is a very science of mind kind of thing. The 100% commitment to the 100% responsibility for my experience means that I won't project anything onto the other person. So if we take less than 100%, then we become a victim. We leave it open for ourselves to become a victim, right? Because if I'm not 100% responsible, there's always that open door that says, well, it's not my fault I'm having this experience. It's the other person's fault. If we take more than 100% responsibility, that means we're entering into codependency. Like, not only am I taking responsibility for me and what I create, but I'm also taking responsibility for you. And now we're in a codependent relationship. So in here we're saying we take 100% responsibility. So step one was commitment. I commit myself to being in conscious relationship. Step two is learning to love yourself. Learning to love yourself. That one also, some of these from an intellectual point of view seem so obvious, right? Like, of course. Like, all of us in here would say, of course I love myself. I don't think if I asked a single person in here, do you love yourself? And they would say, no, I'm lousy, I'm terrible. Maybe one person would, I don't know. But for me personally, as I've been on this journey, and I really asked myself, and I really looked at myself, I found all these places where I did not love myself, where I did not accept myself, where I was, as a friend of mine once said, don't be so mean to yourself, when she heard me say something one time, right? Like, how nice are we to ourselves? Oftentimes, we're much nicer to other people than we are to ourselves. So a key step in conscious relationship is, someone's laughing about that. A key step in conscious relationship is to love ourselves so that we can allow the love to come in. Step three, I love this step. Step three is learning to feel. Isn't that kind of crazy, though? Learning to feel? Like, why do we have to learn how to feel? But the reason for me that I had to learn how to feel is because I was taught that I wasn't supposed to have any feelings. So since I was taught I wasn't supposed to have any feelings, I always pushed them down, and I had no idea even what I was feeling. When I went through practitioner training, we would always do lots of different exercises and everything, and we'd be doing these exercises, and they'd say, so how do you feel, right? And they'd be going around the circle, and some people were very in touch with their feelings, and they'd say, I feel this, and some people would be in tears and everything, and they'd come to me. And they go, okay, Gregory, well, how do you feel? And my answer was always the same. Well, it was either one of two things, but usually it was, I feel fine. And the other answer was, I don't feel so fine. And so I got away with this for a while. And they come to me like, how do you feel, Gregory? Oh, I feel fine. And eventually, one day, my teacher, bless her, because it was a great big opening for me, my teacher came right up to me and put her chair right in front of me, sat just a couple feet from me, and looked me right in the eye and said, so, Gregory, tell me what fine feels like. And I was so busted. Now, mind you, I wasn't trying to hide. I really actually didn't know any other feeling other than fine or not fine. And then she began to help me. She gave me a whole sheet of paper with little icons on them, little, what do we call them today on the phone? The emojis. Before emojis came about, she was ahead of her time. There were all these little emojis that had like sad, angry, happy, all these different emotions on there. And it opened up a whole new world for me of like, wow, here's this wide range of feelings, wide range of emotions that go beyond fine or not fine. The important thing on the spiritual path that I have found about feelings, about emotions, is, for one, and what I say is they don't lie. They're very honest, right? If I feel angry, if you feel angry, there's something there. Like you can't, no one can say to you, if you say, I feel angry, no, you don't. Because you do feel angry. It's not, it doesn't define you, it doesn't define me. But it's an experience I'm having, and why am I having that experience? When we peel back the layers of that emotion, there's an amazing place of our spiritual growth and unfolding. So ironically for me, very much ironically, this thing that I knew nothing about and thought I wasn't even supposed to have and resisted has been one of the biggest openings for me on the spiritual path to my growth. Because they don't lie, every time I feel something, and I have, especially if it's an intense emotion that I'm feeling, and I go back into that and I allow myself to fully feel it and experience it and peel back the layers, if you will, which really just means I be very present to it. So instead of pushing it down, I actually accentuate it. I actually allow myself to fully feel it, and then I allow it to reveal to me what that's about, right? Like our triggers, right? Like you're experiencing something with a person and you feel really agitated. Why? Maybe you're the only one in that situation that's agitated by that person. Why? That's where our spiritual growth really happens in a lot of cases. Peeling back that layer as to what's going on in me, what's the learning here for me, what's the growth here for me that this feeling in me is indicating. Feelings don't lie. Feelings are very honest. The mind, as beautiful and wonderful as it is, we can rationalize pretty much anything. But the feelings, we really can't rationalize away. If we feel angry, we feel angry. And now we need to discover what is the source of that. What is the cause for that? What is the reason for that? What's the underlying truth that that's trying to reveal to us about where we are right now? Feelings. Learning to feel. Step three is learning to feel. There's so many environments where we've been taught not to feel or not to acknowledge our feelings. Or right, or if you, right now, even in spiritual community sometimes, right, you say, oh, I'm feeling really sad. No, no, you don't have to feel sad. You can be happy. Well, that's true. But right now, you might feel sad. And I don't want to take your gift away from you. That feeling, that emotion is a gift that's trying to reveal something. And to take that away from you is to take away the gift. So first, we feel the feeling. We peel back the layers. We be present to it. We see what it's revealing to us. And then we let it go. Then we release it. Then we affirm something new. Then we create something new. Step four, claiming creativity. Claiming creativity is a very science of mind idea. That goes back to the idea that we are 100% responsible for our experience. So claiming creativity means that when something happens, I look at how did I participate in bringing this about, right? So let's say we just have an argument with a person. We say, how did I participate in bringing this about? We don't take it all on ourselves because the other person participated as well. But we look at what was my part in bringing this about instead of looking for whose fault was it? Was it your fault? Was it my fault? Let's argue about whose fault this is. Instead, we say, what was my part? It's not even really our business to figure out what the other person's part was. That's their thing to figure out what their part was. Mine is to look at what was my part in bringing this about. So claiming creativity means we don't get to be a victim. We get to realize how powerful we are. And so oftentimes when we talk about this, someone would say, well, what about situations of abuse? And in situations of abuse, no, we don't want to blame the person for the abuse. But what we do want to say is what we do look at when we're in an abusive situation is why have I allowed myself to be in a situation like this? Because oftentimes when we're in situations like that, we continually be in them, right? We find one, we leave that one, we find another one. I was never personally in physically abusive or even really verbally abusive relationship, but I, in my 20s, I would always attract people who didn't treat me very well. And eventually I was like, wow, right? Now, one way we could go with that is to be a victim and go, that's just the way the world is. People are mean. People suck. Excuse my language. Right? But to take full responsibility for that is to say, what is it in me that keeps drawing people who treat me badly? And when I did, I realized I didn't really think I deserved to be treated very well. That was the truth. Not on a conscious level. It's not like I consciously woke up and said, boy, I hope people treat me badly today. But on a hidden, unconscious level, when I really looked at deeper down, I didn't feel that I deserved to be treated well. Once I shifted that and decided, you know what, I want to treat everyone well, and I only choose to be with people who treat me well, I never experienced that again. Not that I never experienced anyone not treating me well, but I never had it in any relationship or any close relationship anymore. So, step four is claiming creativity. So we stop claiming that we're a victim, or we stop claiming that life is just that way, and we start to ask ourselves, wow, I'm a powerful being. I wonder how I participated in creating this in my life, and how can I create something different if it's not working for me? Step five, learning to tell the microscopic truth. learning to tell the microscopic truth. Now, usually when people hear about telling the microscopic truth, sometimes they get very excited and they go, oh yeah, I'm all into that. I want to tell the microscopic truth. Boy, do I want to tell a few people off. Thank you for letting me, giving me permission, because I got a whole list of people that I want to tell the microscopic truth to. I want to tell them right now. I'm going to go right after service and tell them. I don't want to burst anyone's bubble who had that thought. But this microscopic truth is the microscopic truth about ourselves. This is the microscopic truth about what's really going on with me, right? Because usually we don't tell the microscopic truth when we're, let's say we're angry. We're angry about something. Usually we don't tell the microscopic truth. What's the truth we tell when we're angry with someone? Right, we tell them all about themselves, right? We go like, I am angry because you did this and you always do that and you never do this and blah. But the microscopic truth, the real truth, is something is arising in us. And no one can cause something to arise in us. The only cause of something arising in us is something in us. Someone would say that they might have been, they might have pushed your button, but they didn't install it. They pushed the button, but they didn't install that button. That button was already there. So telling the microscopic truth is to become a little bit more vulnerable, is to begin to say, I'm not a victim. I'm powerful, and I participate in creating my experience. And here's what's really going on in me. So what's really going on in me, if I use a personal example, like I grew up in an environment where there were some people around me who I experienced as being very controlling. So as an adult, whenever I'd be in relationship and I'd experience something that looked like controlling behavior, I would get triggered by that. Right? I get triggered by that. I get... And in my old days, before becoming conscious with it, I would say, you are very controlling. You are trying to control me. You are this. But in becoming more conscious, it becomes, oh, right now I'm being triggered because I have a real trigger around control. And as you're doing that, I'm getting triggered by that, but I'm not blaming the person. I'm sitting with it myself and saying, oh, there's that trigger I have, and now I have the chance to heal it, which is what has happened for me, amazingly, because it was a real trigger. It was an intense trigger for me. If I perceive someone as controlling, that was an intense trigger. Intense emotion would arise in me. And now, it's pretty darn neutral most of the time. Simply by acknowledging it, observing it, being present to it, allowing myself to feel what was coming up, but not projecting it outward. Beginning to look at, oh, how does that arise in me? And what happens at that moment? And what's the real truth here? And beginning to let go of that idea that anyone could even control me or that anyone could even have power over me. Step six, keeping your agreements. Keeping our agreements is so important to creating a conscious relationship. Doing what we say we're going to do. This one also seems on the surface to be like, oh, well, of course I would keep my agreements, right? But there's all these little places where if we're not conscious, we can sabotage relationships. I think about when I was in a relationship and I was coming home one day and I was running late, and the thought came to me, oh, I ought to call my partner and tell them I'm running late. And then this other little part of me came in and said, I'm my own person. Why do I have to tell anyone if I'm late? I don't need to call anyone. I don't need to tell anyone anything. My sense of needing to be in control, right? And so I didn't make the call. And then it, of course, caused, you know, a conflict, an unnecessary conflict. So keeping our agreements and being conscious about keeping our agreements such that we don't sabotage ourselves in relationship. And finally, step 7 comes back to learning to live in a state of continuous positive energy. Most of us have been taught that that wouldn't be possible. Most of us, if we told someone that, right, they'd say, oh, that's not possible. It's not possible to live in a state of positive energy all the time. You know, life has its ups and downs. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. But today I'm inviting us to question that belief that we can't live in a continuous state of positive energy. It doesn't mean that things won't happen that come up. But is it possible for us to be in a continuous state of positive energy where even as things are coming up, we still choose to be conscious? We still choose to be in positive energy even as we hold something that might be very difficult. We do get to choose how we hold it, right? We might not get to choose what is happening on the outside, but we certainly get to choose how it is that we hold it, how it is that we be with it. So that's the choice to live in a continuous state of positive energy, that we choose to stay conscious. So again, around the continuous state of positive energy is also one of the ways that we stay in a continuous state of positive energy is that we realize when we've reached our upper limit. So we're with a person, we're having a really good experience, and we start to feel uncomfortable all of a sudden. And we start to feel those impulses that come up that says, I got to bring this energy down, it's too much. And we start to see ourselves go into our programmed unconscious behavior where we're going to start picking an argument or a fight to bring the energy down. Or we're going to do something else. And we use that as our cue to say, you know what, I need some space right now. And we allow space, just as much as connection and being together, we allow space to be a very healthy choice instead of something we're offended by. I was always offended by that before I got on this more conscious path. I always thought, well, what did I do? Did I do something? You need space? What do you mean you need space? Are we about to break up? Sometimes I'd even break up with them at that point. Right? Oh, I think they're going to break up with me. I'll do it, take a preemptive strike and break up with them. Yeah, some of these truths that are in the book, Conscious Loving, it's not for the faint of heart. You know, some of these truths are not easy to hear. I was on one of these online dating sites for a little while, like experimenting with you know, that whole online dating thing. And on there, you could list books that you were reading. And so I listed this book, Conscious Loving. I thought, yeah, let me. This is what I'm all about. How about you? And there was a woman who had expressed interest in me, and then she saw that I was reading that book. And she sent me a message, and she said, oh, no. this isn't going to work. She said, I looked into that book, and I see what it's, that's too much. That's too much. And I get it, because this is calling us into such a level of responsibility where we don't get to be a victim, where we don't get to play small, where we don't get to pretend that things just happen to us, and where we get to fully accept ourselves as the amazing beings that we are, and then we get to be fully our amazing selves, so we have no excuse to not be our amazing self. So the invitation today is to accept the charge of conscious relationship. Accept the charge that we're amazing, powerful beings and that we can live in a continuous state of positive energy, and that our practice is to take space to integrate what is happening rather than unconsciously create things that create space. To consciously create a little distance for ourselves rather than unconsciously create distance for ourselves. And then to go out and spread this out in the world. Begin to model this way of being conscious in relationship. Don't you think our world needs that right now? A modeling of how to consciously be with each other. That's the invitation today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Reverend Gregory. Yeah.